You're listening to Nebraska on Tap. This podcast will tap you into the Natural Resources District, managing Nebraska's water since 1972. Whether you are a farmer, rancher, or citizen of Nebraska, this podcast was made for you. Time to tap into this week's episode. This podcast is hosted by Heather Dismang and brought to you by the Middle Republican Natural Resources District.
Hey everyone, welcome to this week's edition of Nebraska on Tap. So this week we invited Rourke Paulman from Paulman Farms to come join us and give his take on some of the newest technology because he loves technology. He's a well-known character for that here in this area for being so technologically driven with his farm practices. So I wanted to talk to him and see what was going on with that. Plus, Rourke's been involved in so many aspects of water here in Nebraska. It was great to talk to him about an overall range of really good information. So let's get into that interview with Rourke. And don't forget to subscribe so you always know when we're launching our new podcast episode.
Rourke Paulman, Paulman Farms. I am third generation, and the fourth generation is on the farm. Our son, youngest of four kids, Zach, he makes all the day-to-day decisions. And the fifth generation, I pick him up every morning, and he knows more about the farm than his grandpa does. So we farm 8,000 acres, which about 80% of that is groundwater irrigated. A portion of that is in the Upper Republican, some in the Middle Republican, but the bulk of it is in the Twin Platte. Mm-hmm. And we're a large popcorn grower. Of course, have other crops and rotate, dry edible beans, bentos, black turtles. We grow sunflowers. We've grown milo, potatoes, sugar beets. Of course, the corn and soy and hard red and hard white wheat. And just we've tried about everything as long as it's profitable. So that's where we are today. This is my 39th crop.
That is awesome. Yeah, the articles that have you present in them all talk about precision ag, professional innovation, persistence, experiments. You team up with technology, remote irrigation technology. You've talked with the Nature Conservatory about saving water and securing food. You have soil moisture probes, the IBM Weather Company. 2017, you talked about taking wheat off your growing list. I don't know which growing season that was 8 years ago, so your 31st crop. And then you are the chair of Nebraska Water Balance Alliance, which is from the Ogallala Water Summit. You even ran as a senator. One article has you headline, Always Innovating at Paulman Farms. You've done podcasts with the Doetree Water for Food, The Stream. PBS has done a installment on the Paulman Farm. You've been on the Farm Pass, the Prairie for Food Irrigation Today. You've received the Kremer Achievement Award. You take part in TAPS. And that is why I really wanted to talk to you today, because I wanted to talk to you about your thoughts on technology and all the things that you've done with it. So far in the Middle Republican, things that we've tried to do to benefit our farmers was the AEM survey, our telemetry meters, and then we've dabbled in the soil moisture probes, but we just don't have funding for that this time. So can you tell me a little bit of all your aspects of working with all this technology, how you've become so passionate about all the technology as well, and how that benefits others?
Absolutely.
When you try to snowball
out? I've had kind of an insider look at a lot of these things. I've been a part of the integrated management planning for the Republican Basin since it started, and also been a stakeholder as well as an integrated management plan for Twin Platte as well as the Platte River Basin. And I still hold seats as stakeholders on both of those. And you know, that's probably the first reason that we started taking a look at, you know, how to manage our water better was allocations. And I got in a lot of trouble with the Republican NRDs, with Jack's predecessor and of course, Jasper, and was down in the lower Republican. And I made the statement that I wasn't a meter guy. But nobody heard me say the rest of that statement is we need the data. We need to understand those withdrawals, that pumping in real time. you know, at that time, we read them in the spring, we read them in the fall, and we got our water report, and we typically read ours every other week. We tried to stay on top of, but at that time too, you had a lot more flexibility with the water. Mm-hmm. And so you could borrow from your savings, you could, you know, borrow from next year's in that 5-year rolling allocation. And it was a lot more flexible, but there's no reason that we wanted to overpump the precious aquifer, but also it costs money. Mm-hmm. It, those assets that are sitting there, the pump, the pivot, the sprinkler packages, all of that stuff, not to mention more seed, you know, more fertility, more agronomic inputs under irrigation, you know, you needed to manage that. And the idea that the first step was around meters was a big deal. But we took the next step, and it got me in a lot of trouble because they thought I was against meters, but I wasn't. I wanted the data. And so we pushed on and early on with remote monitoring and telemetry on the pivots. Then, of course, from then we've gone to ultrasonic meters and propeller meters and real time and pressure transducers and satellite imagery plays a big role. Understanding your soil, the soil triangle, understanding, you know, how much sand and clay and infiltration rates and water holding capacities so that you make more informed and have the data to support those decisions in real time. And that has been my focus and how I've also instilled in Zach and also my grandson now who's 9, I talk about that stuff is inform yourself, make sure you've got multiple sources and of course, the NRD was a big part of that. And yeah, they're a political subdivision. There's some restrictions on what makes the most sense. But adoption of technology still today lags. I mean, with the innovation, I say it all the time, it occurs at light speed, but adoption is somewhat slower than the box turtle trying to cross the highway. Yeah, it's just really low. And as the pressure mounts, you know, lower commodity prices, less allocations, you know, higher energy costs, you know, wells now, you know, to pull one out and trip them out and put them back in and rework them, you know, it's about 3 times what it was 10 years ago. And those things like that, the tools that you can look at and integrate into your operation are super helpful, but they all come with a cost. And that cost makes it prohibitive for a producer. Because we made a mistake early on with all the technology, no matter whether it was an NRD or whether it was a soil moisture probe provider or pivot telemetry or a satellite imagery, is we never showed them an ROI. We did not show them, how are you going to get this money back? We always told them that you get yield. Well, yippee-ki-yay. I mean, that's very subjective in terms of, you know, did it really amount to that $10 or $12 an acre that you asked me to pay? Did I really get $10 or $12 or more of value back? And today it's different, I believe. I think there's more of that. We're able to better assess those things. And as these softwares and the hardware continues to catch up and continues to innovate, I believe that we're, you know, I think we're really gaining ground. We really are.
Yeah. And like you said, you're in 3 different districts. You've tried all these different things. You've worked with a lot of different technology. Do you feel that being within 3 NRDs and having more than one soil type has just really kept your spark going?
Oh, there's absolutely no doubt. You know, we rotated crops in the Republican because, you know, dry beans and wheat and sorghum were less consumptive. Mm-hmm. Actually, popcorn uses 2 inches less water annually consumptive use than corn does. So that was, we didn't want to grow popcorn to grow popcorn. Ultimately, that's what it turned into, but it used less water. So we could grow an economically viable crop with a return because it used less water in that 5-year rolling allocation. But nobody ever asked you that. You know, they're always looking, what are you doing that for? And so we started the Nebraska Water Balance Alliance. And again, we kind of got off on the wrong foot with some of the regulatory bodies, you know, the state and the NRDs and some of the people that have been doing this for a long time, because we made the statement, there's better ways to do it. And what we should have said was, you know, we're trying to innovate and support and inform the decisions that are imperative for the NRD and the state to comply with compacts. And we didn't say that. We just said, okay, we're just going to work at this and make it better for the producer. And over time, you know, we've all come to the same conclusion is, you know, how do we work? How do we distribute this technology to the, what I call entry level, the mid level, and the most progressive, you know, growers that'll utilize the technology? Not everybody's going to do it. Not everyone is going to use it. I get it. I mean, you don't have to have the latest and greatest, but you certainly need something to, so that we protect that valuable, valuable resource water that sits underneath of us.
Right. And, you know, I remember opening up gated pipe with my dad when I was younger, and now you can set in your office and turn it on or schedule it to turn on.
Yeah. And we do that too. We load control. That's a good example. You know, that used to be like it, like an X, you know, oh my gosh, they're coming after our power. And we can't afford to be shut off, you know, 10 hours a day. And we self load control ourselves. On the days that the power companies don't look, we shut off anyway, because those high ET rates, with the wind and the sun and the heat from 1 o'clock till six, I mean, and then the wind blows 30 mile an hour. Most of that water doesn't get to the ground anyway. We have a big project with Google through the Water Balance Alliance and with Arable. They're a full suite weather station. So you've got rain events, you've got evapotranspiration, you've got a camera. A multispectral camera on there. It takes a picture every day at 2 o'clock. And when it goes around with the pivot, so it's geo-referenced in that field. And let's say that it says you're at 40 or 50% of field capacity. And so you're putting on slightly more water, less than 2 or 3% more than what the ET is calling for. So are you actually building up that checkbook or that reserve in the soil? It's allowed us, instead of operating at field capacity or at saturation level, all that water in the soil, we operated between 40 and 60%. And boy, that we didn't used to do that. We were afraid to, because we didn't know. And we didn't know how it was, you know, we trusted that sprinkler chart and that well efficiency and that flow meter and everything was telling us that we were putting out the right amount of water. Then that trusted group of advisors, the agronomist and your fertilizer guy and all that are helping you, you know, basically build a prescription based off of inherent climatic projections. And so now we've got a weather station on every field. And so we're looking at it over 26,000 acres for 7 years. And hopefully in year two or three, we'll have the opportunity to use artificial intelligence to be able to help us look over our shoulder, but also predict out 2 or 3 days and be able to even really hone in on, say, load control or, you know, just reduce pumping, more of a just-in-time application of water and nutrients. Mm-hmm. It's remarkable where we are. And you know, it's always on the edge. And that's kind of been the fun part of our farm. And Zach's really embraced it, our son. And he's a little more practical because he goes, Dad, this has to make money. You know, I can't just apply it and not have it make a return. So
right.
That's in the back of our mind all the time.
And leading into that, so you've talked to people all over the country. I just want to ask you, how do you feel Nebraska compares when it comes to water technology in the U.S.?
So interestingly enough, because, you know, I've spoke in Washington, D.C. to New York, to Texas, to North Dakota, and I'd overseas as well, too. I had some interest in South Africa as well as interest in Argentina. I was a part of a Valley center pivot dealership for almost 11 years. And so I was able to be a part of their R&D program but also be a part of having that international flavor and that kind of border to border, north, south, east and west, domestically as well too within the U.S. And we host annually at our farm for almost 20 years now, typically a group either through the Doherty Water for Food, the Nebraska Water Center, and we've also just done it on our own, but they've been from all over the world. China, some time ago, we had several groups come through, and and Brazilians and Argentinians and Chile and Paraguay. And so we've been able to kind of understand kind of even the international flavor and how they look at us. And, you know, I've heard for a long time that our system is one of the best, and I would have to say it is. It is right up there. And the thing that I really appreciate, quite frankly, is we haven't stopped. You know, it's not like you're shooting for sustainability or this benchmark. Now we have goals and we have stream depletion factors and stream flows that we have to help offset and continually evaluate and make adjustments for. And that's what just gets me is typically the producers as well as their NRD partners haven't sat on their hands. They've continued to look at those tools. But again, I'm going to go back to the adoption piece. If we get 10 or 15% adoption in say the Middle Republican with a particular tool that you know drops our pumping another half inch or inch, that's a lot of water as you spread that across the acres. And so those innovative, you know, I call them dipping our toes in the water, they're important because they may or may not lead to further investment or innovation.
Going back to what you said about all those other countries coming through and looking at stuff, you know, a lot of other countries want to know what they're buying when they buy it, you know, to produce food for their citizens or biofuel or, you know, what have you. So that brings up a really great point, knowing, you know, all those people come in and kind of want to know what's going on. I can't really blame them. If I was to buy some seed from somebody, you know, for consumption, I'd want to know what was going on too. But yeah,
well, it's a two-way street.
Yeah.
That's a two-way conversation. Mm-hmm. They bring something to the table too. It isn't a one-way exchange. I mean, what I've learned these 39 crop years is I surrounded myself with trusted advisors and, you had to listen and pay attention to everybody within the NRD system, because if you didn't, you didn't understand the regulatory expectations and you can't ignore that bell. You can't ignore it. And because pretty soon, you know, if you do nothing long enough, pretty soon you get what you deserve. And so, okay, you've got these $1 million investments on these irrigated pivots, and okay, and all at once you don't have water, or you have less water than what it would take to be fully irrigated, or something even less than that. Wow, that investment, that's a huge, huge, huge risk. So paying attention and being partners and invested in this process, if we can learn something from our neighbors and from overseas, absolutely.
Like you said, too, with the IMPs, so for people that don't know what IMPs are, they started with LB-962, and it's for appropriated areas or over-appropriated areas for water management issues. So we have to do fun things here at the NRD to try to make sure that we stay within those regulatory areas. So I'll just have you kind of review us on that, Rorick. So how do you feel the Middle Republican's doing with our telemetry meters that we're having CanSIM put in for measuring that water to make sure that we keep making that compact to Kansas?
You know, the interesting part of all of that is every tool, the regional bias, the expectation of the differences from basin to basin, sub-basin and sub-basin, that each and every one of those, the locally controlled boards, the concepts that go on, they understand their homes, they understand their municipal expectations, they understand their schools and what it takes as a community, and that direction or that thoughtfulness drives a lot of the reason of how NRDs differentiate themselves, but also how they attack the different expectations. The Republican compact is different than the South Platte compact, is different than the endangered species expectations on the lower Platte. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just all kinds of reasons to show up at meetings and understand what's going on and listen and pay attention. And if you've got something to add, either join the board or most certainly, you know, be a part of public hearings and understand what's going on. That and the leadership. I mean, I picked on Jack the other day. I volunteered him to come and talk to the NRCS subcommittee on water quality and talk about what's going on in the middle, because and here's why, is it's important that, okay, there's money constraints, there's time, there's people, there's HR constraints, but you continue to carve out small pieces eventually that maybe adoption will take hold of, or an industry partner will take over and go, hey, you know, I can build these. I can make them for half of what we are today if we move 1,000 units. And what does that mean? Is that a half inch less use? Is that a more efficient return on an investment? I mean, there's a multitude of ways to look at it, but most importantly is that open communication. That piece, you know, for the longest time, we were shrouded in having to figure out how we're going to comply. And, you know, it got contentious at times showing up at meetings when you talk about restricting somebody's water. Mm-hmm. And you didn't know. So all at once, when you're doing this AEM analysis, when you're measuring aquifer levels and you're measuring withdrawals and you're measuring stream flows and that conflict that existed between groundwater and surface water diverters, and holy smokes, but no one, until the IMPs came along, we never all sat in the same room. We sat across from each other and threw barbs and arrows and nuts and bolts at each other until, you know, we finally said enough's enough. Let's figure out how to do this together.
I've heard from our board member, Joe Andrzejewski, about how full the room was when those meetings yes. went on. And how the sheriff had to show up.
but again, yeah. Think about it. If we wouldn't have had that opportunity,
right.
Just think about that. In other words, if that was being done from Lincoln, where would our voice have been? Are we all going to get in a bus and drive to Lincoln?
Right.
No, it happened in Curtis, Nebraska. It happened in, you know, it happened in North Platte. It happened in Grand Island. Or, you know, as the IMP progressed or expanded, I mean, we traveled all over the state for the Platte Basin one, mm-hmm. For 2 years on that IMP. And of course the ongoing assessments, you know, it isn't as if it's gone away and we've met all the benchmarks. It's a continual expectation of doing more because, you know, the weather changes, climate, mm-hmm. you know, we can make fun of it all we want, whether climate change is real or not, but there certainly is some differences compared to the way it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's facts. I mean, I remember when I was in high school back here, it was just so, so dry. And then we'd get some, you know, water episodes, and then we go back to dry for another couple of years. I mean, being a farmer is definitely, you guys have to be highly optimistic to stick in there.
Well, here's where we are today is we used to pick on irrigation as the sole, you know, figuring out, you know, withdrawals and application, that was the single focus. It was, and that's what we were doing. You're going to regulate it. You guys figure out what you want to do otherwise. And what we've come to understand is it's all part of a system, and it is very intertwined. And the reason that we know this today is the data. We get more genetic data today from seed. We get much more robust on the agronomic inputs, you know, from chemistry to fungicides to drought tolerance to now no-till and residue management and all of those things. And now it's about soil, understanding the microbiome and infiltration rates and water holding capacity. We didn't map our fields for that. Today, all of our fields are mapped for that. We have mapped our fields, and we know that if we get a 2-inch rain on number 21 pivot, that it's a good silt loam soil. It'll infiltrate most of the field. I'm not talking about everybody's in general, but this particular combination of soils will infiltrate about a half an inch an hour. Well, if it rains at an inch per hour, what's it going to do?
Right.
It's going to run off. Mm-hmm. It's going to run off. And so residue management and no-till, then that helps improve that. It allows it to kind of hang around on the surface a little bit longer, and then it depends on the duration of that rainstorm. And it's the flip side on evaporation. You know, who would have thought that we're farming through 250 to 300 bushel residue today? We didn't have the equipment to do it. We had to go disc. We had to go chisel. We had to go field cultivate so that we could get our planter through the field without dragging up a great big pile of trash. Today, we can go right back out into that same trash and not do anything. Or you integrate some cows or, you know, whatever, livestock into the rotation. But that's the system concept. And now we're having to parse that up now. And okay, when we affect that, so water quality, that's a big one. That's something I'm really focused on now, is this water quality piece. Well, there was a lot of this movement to fertigation, and I was surprised that less than, I think Jennifer Swanson, who's in the NARD, told me that less than 30% of the wells in Nebraska are certified for chemigation, fertigation. I was surprised by that. I mean, that's a tool to, you know, apply smaller amounts of nitrogen over the growing season and mitigate some of that, like in a soil that has infiltration rates of 2 inches per hour and only a water holding capacity of an inch per foot. Well, guess what happens if you put on 100 pounds of 3200 with a pivot on that kind of soil with an inch of water? Holy smokes, it's not going to stay where you want it. It's not going to stay in the root zone where that crop needs it. And that's an extreme example, very extreme example, because, you know, no one wants to do that. And so spoon feeding but again, you know, analysis and tools, Jackson Stanzel with his Sentinel fertigation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We helped him start the very first field that he developed or worked with his model on. I'm sitting on the edge of it right now, as a matter of fact. It's right here in Lincoln County. And Jackson and I and Zach talk often. Now he's working on, we Y drop ours. We've reduced our nitrogen by 40%, and still raising exceptional yields. Now, 40% of, if you're putting on 200 pounds, that's 80 pounds. Now, that's not the way it works. That isn't the way it works. I just made that as a reference point, but to show the value of a 40% reduction if you're actually applying 200 pounds. But the crop conditions and soil and all of that stuff is going to determine those things. But now we know we can really start to dial in on that. So it's like looking at irrigation on steroids. Is now you're taking that same fertilizer, that same crop input, and using the same kind of tools and concepts to zero in on it, just like we did with irrigation and continue to do with irrigation.
When I took my drone class through the UNL Extension, doing drone spraying, and have you ever participated in drone spraying or anything like that, or what are some of your thoughts on that?
The co-op here has three of them, and I will say this, we have not had a drone spray. We continue to watch that. We have our own sprayer. We have our own See and Spray from Deer. So we're about timing, and we do it all ourselves. We do not hire any commercial spraying done at this point. Maybe a little bit of crop protection, say fungicides on our edible beans is all, but that's late in the season. But otherwise, we do all our own spray. I see it as a value someday. The more that we can focus and just spray on specific spots and specific pests, absolutely. There's no doubt. But right now, my grandson has one, and we crashed it out in the cornfield, and it took us 4 hours to find it.
And real quick, too, Rourke, so you're part of UNL TAPS, and you've been a part of it for quite a while. And
I was one of the founding members.
Yeah.
As a founding member.
Oh, and Ted Tejens told me a little bit about your evapotranspiration too, you know, so that's some really awesome stuff. And Chuck had talked on that. And so with doing the TAPS, do you feel like it's been extremely beneficial for you to kind of see when you tweak things and move things around, how it affects your crop on just, you know, on the test plot?
Well, so I sit on the advisory still to all of it. So here's what I'll tell you about the success of TAPS. It now is being funded by NRCS. They're a major partner, and it's now going to 5 states, and there'll be 2 other states that'll be at our farm on the 22nd of August. So Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas, Colorado, and Nebraska mm-hmm. are now part of TAPS, as well as Master Irrigator, writing and developing and forwarding a curriculum to help support the testing out of TAPS, to allow a producer to really hone in on, let's say that he'd never had a soil moisture probe or a weather station and didn't understand ET or what water holding capacity that the probe was actually measuring. This class will give them an opportunity. Hopefully we'll have some perks out of that they would get to go back possibly to NRCS, but Also, Florida, Georgia, Auburn, Mississippi. TAPS has spun off into a national program that is much a tribute to not only Nebraska's leadership, but the TAPS project taking off with the Nebraska Water Balance Alliance and other partners. Dr. Darren Rudnick jump-started along with Chuck Burr. From there, it's grown, and it's going to continue to expand because what better place for industry, A, to get feedback on a technology that they may or may not be considering, or they already have in commercial use, but also feedback from the peers that may be that entry level to mid level to a really engaged grower that is willing to use all those tools every day.
Yeah.
And so it's huge. It is a huge deal. I encourage everyone to join or look up and get into a TAPS project, into a TAPS competition.
Yeah. Alexa Davis from DNR was talking about how, you know, she's part of a team, and I went to the TAPS kickoff, and it's just so interesting to see all the different aspects that go into the growing and then be able to see that data. So I can see why it's been such a successful program for the precision ag and all that stuff.
Yeah, we also are launching a high school, and then there's a virtual TAPS. You know, they're doing that crowdsourcing. We're working through UNL with Tiffany Hangmoss and her team on a junior-senior high school TAPS. And so, there's a lot going on around the whole TAPS concept.
Yeah, and I don't think my dad's ever going to leave the program either. So I think you just got quite a few people in there for a long time. So it's really great for that. And then my last question to you is, what helps you stay so passionate in the farming industry? But I think we already have our answers. So I don't think I need to ask you that question.
There's a future. And my grandsons are both out today, and they're both looking at me, and when their job's done, they stand and look at you again. But from a year ago till now they'll walk over and grab a broom, or they'll walk over and they'll grab their phone, and they both have the youngest one anyway, Brant, has the arable app on his phone. He has the Valley app, and he can't do anything on it, but he can look at the weather, he can look at the pivots, and he asks questions. And that's the piece that we have to stay engaged with the next generational transition here is this value and make sure that they know it's important to us as well as to them that, you know, this isn't something that we just put water out there because we have water, or we put fertility or seeds or whatever else, so that we're trying to grow and feed a growing population and that it's safe and that we are growing it appropriately. And that's a huge deal. How do you do that otherwise if you don't take some time and try to pass that on?
Right. And if people want to know what you're up to, they can also follow you on your Twitter handle here. I see on the July 3rd, you were doing pinto beans planted into oat cover crop. So.
Yep. I probably don't post as much on there as I should, but at harvest, I will. We'll have more data and some more things going, so I'll hit it more then.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much, Rourke, for taking time out of your day today to talk to us about all the things we talked about, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, I hope everybody enjoyed my conversation with Rourke. It's always great to see how inspired he gets when he talks about all of the generations that he has growing up on the farm and learning about the farm, and him actually being a great teacher and being able to teach them about all those great things too. So that was just perfect. Thanks again, Rourke. And I hope everybody got a little inspiration from that. And again, as Rourke says, if you want to get involved, you always can. There are options and opportunities to do so. So with that being said, again, we will see you next week. Don't forget to like and subscribe again so you know when we're launching our episodes. I try to be consistent about it, but sometimes things get a little wild here. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube, our RSS feed, Spotify, and we will talk to you guys later. Have a good one. Bye-bye.